Radio NFM, die stem van die Namakwa mense, moedig die vryheid van spraak en die uiting van uiteenlopende sienings aan. Sienings van luisteraars en ateliergaste dis hul eie en nie die van Radio NFM nie. Radio NFM neem alle programme op aan. Herhalende opmerkings, kreetaal, discriminerende sienings of skeltaal sal ook nie geduld word.
And it is your time. It is 26 minutes past 1 o'clock. And now, right now, South Africa's language policy may be on the brink of its most significant shifts since democracy. In a way, a new draft bill, the Use of Official Languages Amendment Bill of 2024, was said to propose to dramatically strengthen how government uses and is held accountable for all 12 languages, including South African Sign Language. In a reply to the center of this change is says to be none other than PenSELEP, the PEN South African Language Board, which could soon move from advisory board to a powerful enforcement authority. In a way, the bill would give it the ability to monitor compliance, demand reports, and even issue the instructions to a national department and also the public entities. But what does this mean in practice? Will it finally ensure that all South Africans can access government services in their own languages, or will this implementation challenges the stand in the way? To unpack this, we are being joined by the acting CEO of PenSELEP, Mr. Julius Dantile. Mr. Dantile, thank you very much for joining us on this afternoon.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to your listeners.
With all of that being said, talk to us about this official Use of Languages Amendment Bill of 2024, proposing these dramatically strengthen as to how the government uses and also being held accountable of the official 12 languages.
Yes, we have observed as PEN South African Language Board of a change in the culture of government from being bilingual before 1994 to being multilingual after 1994. And what we have observed is that we are only multilingual on paper, but in practice, we are unilingual. That means we use one language, which is dominantly English. And that is not a correct practice because the mother tongue speakers of English are not even 7% in the country. Most of the people are speaking English as a second language, if not as a 10th language. Now, under those circumstances, that means that in the engagements, especially in public service, the rest of the people that cannot express themselves properly in the English as a second language are faced with a problem of not being neglected and not being heard by government. And that is one of the crucial observations that we have. Thus, we are proposing the amendment of the Use of Official Languages Act, where the second element is that there is no enforcement in terms of the Act, and also even there is weak enforcement in terms of the PEN South African Language Board Act. So even that Act, the PEN South African Language Board Act, is also going to be going amendment. And thus, we are pushing the state to say that the Constitution provides these particular rights and provides equality, provides equitability, and therefore we need to deliver on those so that people can then be able to access public services in their own preferred languages. And that is a constitutional mandate.
The bill also removes the minister's power to grant the exceptions, Section 12, and also deletes the old requirements for the departments to explain how they will it serve the speakers of the leftover languages, Section 2 of 4, actually 2D, in which from the PenSELEP's perspective, does this strengthen or weakens the protection for the smaller official languages like your Nama, your Khoisan, your whichever that are not officially recognized?
Yes, it does. In terms of in terms of the those particular clauses, The actual operation, it diffuses the powers that exist and then transfer them to government. So you are also making government to be accountable to government. But our system is that you have government that should be accountable to another of the state, which is your parliament. And structures like PENSAL were created as a constitutional institution, which we support parliament in terms of the oversight that it has to provide. Therefore, when then you give a certain powers to the minister to make a decision whether this organization or that organization or this institution or that institution may be able to not have a language policy, you are even also against the constitution, because such an exception doesn't exist in the constitution. The constitution is talking about at least two official languages for government purposes. Therefore, all those exemptions are basically unconstitutional, let alone that they're really diluting what we need to do and what we have to do. And I always say this, which is prescribed in the Constitution, where it says that you must look at the use of the language, the usage. Then it goes on to say the practicality. Then it goes to the issue of the expense is at the third level. But then it balances that use of the expense with the needs of the population you are servicing. So therefore, what we are starting with, we start with the expense, not with the practicality. Practicality also, we only see practicality from the side of government, not from the side of the people that were supposed to service. And that's where the problem comes in. So when we define and interpret practicality, we want to define and interpret practicality from the perspective of the government, not from the perspective of the people that we want to service. And that's where the problem comes in. And we are saying those issues which are enshrined in the Constitution, they must be fulfilled in order for us to have socioeconomic development, in order for us to have clear understanding between those who are elected in government and those who are servicing people to deliver services and as public servants and the people. There's that interaction that should be consistent, that is enshrined in terms of our constitution. If we are not going to look at that particular one and raise it to another level, a level where government should understand and people should understand these needs, and then we still remain having the crime that we have. Because learners at school, they cannot express themselves. They cannot free their potential as guaranteed in the preamble of the Constitution, because they are learning in a foreign language. But if you allow them to learn in their own language, they will then build up from the base and the foundation that they already have, because their world and their environment is interpreted in terms of the first language or the language that they are speaking in their own communities. What then you find is that you find a learner that is in grade 12 that has learned about ultrafiltration in school, but that learner cannot utilize the skill of filtering the water for the community. What does that mean? What is the purpose of our education if our education is not there for implementation and utilizing skills? We are not producing inventors. We are not producing innovators, because innovation and invention should be derived from a pure potential. And pure potential is depending on you understanding the environment that you are in, so that you can come up with solutions. We want small businesses. We want entrepreneurs. You are only going to get entrepreneurs when these people are able to interpret things in terms of their own perspective, in terms of their own environment. But I'm telling you, between me and you now, we can go to the Department of Small Businesses and check what are the forms to apply for funding from government. They are only in English. What about the mother who's selling in the streets? How does that mother get access to funding that boosts her business to grow, if then you are going to put that in English? You are saying to that lady who's sitting there next to the street, remain there in the street. We don't have funding for you. We have funding for those who can speak English.
It's very
and that's where the fundamental problem.
Yeah, it's very quite interesting that you have to mention that the departments have to comply, that it says now that the departments must now identify at least 7 official languages, plus including the sign language instance of 3. But also, I would like you to know, in terms of the clause 2C, says that they must take the practical and positive measures to elevate historical diminished indigenous languages. Where does the endangered languages lies within all of these conversations?
Yes. The endangered languages like the Khoisan Sen are recognized in the Constitution. Let me first correct that. But they are not official. So the Constitution of South Africa recognizing a number of languages, and it categorizes them, languages for religious purposes, languages for heritage languages. It even goes on to name the heritage languages. You've got the Indian languages, your Telugu, Gujarati, and all that. Then you have your European languages, your German, and all that. They're mentioned. Then the languages that are recognized for religious purposes, it goes on to mention Arabic, Hebrew, and other languages. So the Constitution in South Africa does recognize a number of different languages. But then it categorizes these languages to say these are official, these are this category and that category. So the Khoisan Sen languages are categorized as non-official languages. So which means that as much as they are not official, but they are within the ambit of government to ensure that they are revitalized, they are used, and they are developed. Pan South African Language Board, as far back as 1999, published a position paper to say that in order for you to use a language, it must be developed. In order for that language to be developed, it must be used. So therefore, it's neither the first or the second one that you have to do. That means it's neither use or develop that comes first. You have to run with these particular processes together so that the language naturally grows itself, develops by it being used in various contexts, including being developed towards the scientific processes. It's when you use the languages. So once you talk about those particular clauses that you are referring to, you are referring to the problem that we have identified that with a minimum of 3, the country is not even using that 3, it's using 1. So let's then make it compulsory, at least for the 50% of the languages to be compulsory across the board. So that then you have the languages being compulsory used by the state. Remember, the use of the language by the state means investment in that language.
Mm.
Investment in that language means investment in the native speakers of that language. In various ways, in terms of investment, you need teachers, you need people who are going to be in offices speaking these languages, you need translators, you need interpreters. So you need a cluster of services in down the value chain around these particular languages. How then do you do that? By investing in those languages. You are creating jobs, and then you are eliminating marginalization of the language, because once you marginalize the language, you are marginalizing the speaker of that language.
Yeah, I would like us to quickly go on to the break. We're going to come back right now.
Gunstelinge is nou vasgemaak teen ongelooflike pryse. 9 pak Spar One Ply toiletpapier vir net R29.99. 170 gram Spar Tuna koop 2 blikkies vir net R40. Heerlike melktert vir net R24.99 elk. Spar boerewors vir 'n fantastiese R109.99 per kilogram. 3 liter Spar koeldrank vir net R16.99 elk. Los pampoene vir R9.99 per kilogram. 1 kilogram vleiwehap gevriesde gemengde groente vir 'n lae R22.99. En Spar whole grilled chicken vir 'n fantastiese R84.99. Hierdie promosies is nou aan tot en met die 31ste Maart 2026 terwyl voorraad hou. Springbok Superspar, passievol oor ons gemeenskap.
You now tuned in to Radio NFM 98.1, the trusted voice of the Namaqua people, with Skylar from Skylar's Fairy Tale Moments.
He's a coward. The president of South Africa is a coward. And we can't tolerate these things happening here in South Africa. Once it's Arab, we are poor people. And they target the poor people. No matter color, they're using us. That's why if we are together, we're going to bring this government down.
From Sunday, we've not received any tankers at all to assist the community to their places of employment. Children needed to get back to schools. And unfortunately, there was no water. They were promised water in their taps at 3 o'clock this morning. Yes. And we cannot have a community that like orphans.
Catch all the latest local, provincial to national news updates on the afternoon current affairs, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 1 o'clock afternoon. Radio NFM.
Welcome back to Radio NFM. This is NFM Current Affairs. The time there it is 18 minutes before 2 o'clock, the 17th of March. I'm still Sipiwe Ngongo behind the mic on this minute. And whereby we are looking to the matters of use of Official Languages Amendment Bill of 2024, proposing a dramatically strengthening as to how the government operates and can be held in terms of accountable of all 12 languages, including the sign language. On the line, we're still having the acting CEO of PenSalab, Mr. Julius Dantile, speaking in terms of this, giving us the clarity. But with all of that, Mr. Dantile, the bill renames the act and leaves the commencement date to the presidential proclamation. Anyway, from the PenSalab side, when would you like to see this law to take the effect? And what kind of transitional support or even guidelines that you provide to the department to avoid any chaos?
We are having consultative processes that are being undertaken now. They are not yet public participation processes from the side of the cabinet or parliament. Remember, at this juncture, it's the department that is required to take those participation processes. They are much more required to look at the technical aspects and bring in the actual practitioners and the technicians around these particular services that are provided through this particular act. So we still have a space and a time where we will involve the public through the parliamentary process, where then you will have a public involvement. But still, the public is still encouraged to make submissions in terms of following the required processes to the department, where they want to make comments around any aspect of the language itself, the act itself, and those can be made in any language out of the official languages, and then be submitted to the department. I think they do have the processes online. So you have those processes. It's not an overnight process. It takes about 2 to 3 years to amend an act in South Africa because of the various stages where you have to ensure that there is public consultation and there's quality that is brought into the amendments, and the amendments are also kind of cost estimated in terms of implementation, because we have a regime that is a cost attainment regime that the state must make sure that they don't just pass the laws without them having an understanding. They are cost and complications. They need to do all those processes, and those processes take a little bit of time. So I'm saying we are estimating that, because this is now in year one, within the next 2 to 3 years, we will have the act amended.
It's quite very interesting that we are only mentioning the public entities. What about the private sector?
Strange enough, that's a question that I'm being asked every time I'm having interviews. strange enough that the private sector is responsive. Remember, the private sector wants business. If you go to the bank now and say, I want a loan of 100 million, but I want this loan in my own language, the bank will then make sure that it makes that particular loan, agreement in your own language. They will do that. So even though I'm talking about big amounts, it's just an example. The power of the client, we have observed this thing with the banks. If the client comes in and say, I will give you an example that there was a bank, I'm on name it, in Limpopo, where a certain society, these community societies, went to the bank, to the branch, and the branch, they requested to have the, they were requested to submit a constitution. They submitted a constitution which was written in Sesotho Salibowa, which is Sepedi. And then the branch rejected that constitution. They wanted it in English. So the society contacted us. We then went to the bank. The bank said, we then wrote to the bank. The bank said, okay, no. We'll accept it. They accepted a constitution of the of that particular society, which is in Sesotho Salibowa. And we have observed those particular agility from the banks and being responsive. And I always say also, it is a fallacy to think that businesses, especially massive transactions of business in this country, are taking place in English. That is not true. It's only the offices and the offices of the elite where you find this issue. When you go to the ground, when you go into any of the supermarkets, I'll ask you like your listeners, what they transact in? They transact in English? No. They transact in their own language. And that's where business is. And I'm telling you, the supermarket will tell you, they advertise in the languages of those people. And they have flyers in the Eastern Cape, in the Western Cape. They make them available in stores. So is you are going to go into KZN. So what I'm trying to say is that private sector is responsive. What is non-responsive and non-compliant? It's government. And that is what is shocking about this particular situation, because private sector wants business. And the last example that I will give is a crude one, where you have people from, from Pakistan, from Bangladesh, and other countries from Ethiopia, that goes into the township and open shops. That person arrives here without knowing, uttering a word of English, and also not knowing the local language. I can ask you a question now. Which language do they know first? It's the language that is spoken in the community, because they're there as business. So private sector is responsive to the people's languages because they want business. That is a point for you.
Yeah. To quite let us close it very quickly in 2 minutes in briefing, we know that there has been a national language summit which has been conducting starting off yesterday under the theme of Towards a Unified National Language and Landscape, an action plan. Let us talk into a briefing. Talk to us about that theme, which, as we know, that you also gave a presentation under the matters of the language development, linguistic decolonization, and also the communication development, in whereby we know that there is so much overpowering influence of English in government communication and service delivery.
Yes, what we're trying to say is that we need an integrated and unified approach where all the sectors that use language, which is every sector uses language, be it business, be it a judiciary, be it education. We need a concerted approach that is integrated and one hand knows what the other hand is doing. I'll give an example in this. When we talk about mother tongue-based bilingual education, we're not just talking that should be a program of the Department of Education. If we are going to make it a program of the Department of Education, we are not going to succeed. It should be an integrated approach and a unified approach that even universities are then preparing and assisting in teacher development for the mother tongue-based bilingual education. Material development from the Pan South African Language Board and also the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture, including universities again, should be engaged. Advocacy, which include businesses, investing in this mother tongue-based bilingual education in order to unleash the individual person's potential, need a concerted effort. It cannot be one element of one. Education is the overall element of transforming society. If then we want to transform our society towards it being empowering the poor, empowering those who are disadvantaged by a language element, and removing these barriers. And I'm saying, even you need the judgments. What is critical and good is that, which I like about this particular matter, is that the Constitutional Court, about 8 or 9 judgments, that the Constitutional Court has been telling the country and government that you are not having meaningful participation and involvement of the public in various aspects of the law, in various aspects of the policies. So we are saying that we need an integrated approach that then takes into cognizance and brings business to have value within these particular languages.
Yeah.
For the languages to have value, they must be used. And that integration is the one that we're talking about now, and that we are saying we need one language policy framework for the sector, then that drives an integrated approach in terms of delivering language matters.
That it is, says to be Mr. Julius Dantile, acting CEO of PenSalab, speaking to us about the proposed use of the Languages Amendment Bill, a piece of legislation that could reshape how languages rights are being realized across government, and how it is currently also looking in terms of the private sector. But with all of that being said, Mr. Dantile, thank you very much for joining us on this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
From the strength enforcement powers to the exclusion of more inclusion, basically, of more Ireland official languages and South African sign language. The bill raises more important questions about accountability, capacity, and what real linguistic inclusion should look like in everyday public services. As the draft move is closer to the parliament and the conversation around language identity and access is only set to grow, whereby I would like to also say thank you to you there at home for joining us. Stay tuned for more of this developing story. On to that note, that's whereby we are closing from my side at CP and Long until we meet again at 3 o'clock for closing news bulletins. I would like to say love, kisses, stay healthy, but most of it all, please stay safe and let us protect one another.